Blog Talk Radio.
Story is riddled with challenges and changes, like blows from a blacksmith's hammer, bent and chiseled into shape. If only forging a poet were that easy. Emotional development, relationship, experiences, environment, genetics, all take hand in molding the immature adult we are today. That was a joke. Come on, we're on the air.
So welcome to the Double Helix, where we examine the X's and Y's on a show celebrating the human experience, where your true colors are what ties the room together. So get comfortable, because what you're about to hear is poetry that we are made of.
I'm the Duke of St. Paul, Dexter Bailey.
And I'm Aphasiana. We will be featuring poems from our contest on the website allpoetry.com. We are part of a group on the website called Late Night Poets. If you are in the group, you can follow along the chat to read the poems as we do for the full experience. However, you do not need to be in the group to contribute poems, call in, or listen.
Thank you, Fill My Eyes from Late Night Poets, and thank you, Blog Talk Radio.
Thank you, Dexter, for hosting with me, and to everyone who contributed poems or calls in. Your writing is what we are here for.
Good evening, everybody. Hopefully all is well with everyone out there that is listening, that is on the board, that is going to listen at a later time to a replay, and that hopefully you guys had a great Thanksgiving and a great start to your December out there. We got another fantastic night of poetry here lined up for you. Aphasiana, are you there?
I'm here.
Fantastic. Excited to have out another another night here that we get to host the show, Double Helix. It looks like I think we will have some callers here this evening. Do we have anybody on the line?
We have Pam Ray.
Pam.
Welcome, Pam.
Thank you for calling in.
Oh, absolutely. I figure it's always better to start a show with three's a crowd and, you know, or three's company or something like that.
Come and knock
you
on
can
our door.
And we'll be the, yeah, exactly.
No, exactly. So I appreciate that very, very much that you were able to call in.
Glad to be here.
And just to give everybody kind of a little bit of a heads up, I think that we're going to start with one that we had carried over from two shows ago, but the first of the contests that we are going to have here, other than the other one right by Daniel, is about the mind games, and it's more mind based on the carryovers from last contest that we had that are more mind games that you play on yourself. And then the second part of it, Faziana posted some of the prompts to it. Why don't you explain the what the other half of the contest will be, Faziana?
All right, so the other half is more mind games people play on you, and it's more about, like, being in a relationship that's unhealthy, maybe with a narcissist who is playing mind games on you. So we're going to have the games you play on yourself and the games others play on you, and I think we're going to get some interesting rights that are going to make us feel
tripped out.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
But you are right that we do have the one from Daniel that's from two shows ago. So we should do that so it doesn't get carried over again because it just happens that we keep running out of time.
Yeah, I think we should. That'd be a great place to start. So why don't we go there and have that kick it off?
All right. So this is called Pilot Light by Daniel Deschino. And the prompt for this was, carve your name on hearts, not tombstones. A legacy is etched into the minds of others and the stories they share about you, which is a quote by Shannon L. Alder. I am a golem of earth and water, consuming the ground of which I walk. Born from the spreading wildfire passion, like a virus through the jungle, driven on by vampire lust that forever powers my soul with chemical craving. Bones like mighty trees that crack and brittle with age. Blood like woodland streams, stagnant and poisoned as the golem kingdom grows. Skin like parchment of a forgotten diary, weathered, fading with stories lost. During the harshest, wettest rainstorm, lightning still strikes and some sparks survive. The scorching heat of the desert floor and flowers will bloom on the desolation of an Arctic plain. Footprints can be found, and spirits can see starlight even in the dark depths of the most soulless of golems. Inspiration is the spark that lights itself. A flame held high, like a beacon on a mountaintop, can give direction to even those most hopelessly lost. My body, a house, my spirit, a fire, to keep the flames within safe, warm, comforting, or to release the flames through open, naked windows and see what catches fire. End poem.
Fantastic read, Faziana, and great write, Daniel. You know, this poem is really fantastic in a lot of ways. I really like the direction that he took as far as almost going, talking about, you know, your legacy and carving your name in hearts is almost as if it's like the impossible happening. You know, even the harshest, wettest rainstorm, lightning still strikes. Scorching heat on the desert floor, the flowers will bloom. It's almost like that Tupac where he talks about the rose that grew from concrete. you know, the legacy and putting your hearts, you know, putting your name on people's hearts and being something that is lived on. Really, when you think about it, is almost an impossible feat. But at the same time, though, the impossible happens all across the globe in so many different ways. And I think that he captured that sentiment very well in this poem. Pam, what did you think about this write?
Yeah, I always enjoy Daniel's poetry. I like how he brought in practical features such as the poem or drawn by vampire lust. And what I like how the witch doesn't really have a soul.
Dex, can you hear Pam?
No, I kind of lost her, too. I wasn't sure if it was just me. Pam, are you there? Did you drop?
She dropped. I can see in the studio she dropped.
Okay, well, Faziana, why don't you take over a comment for her?
Okay. I really liked this. I liked what you said, Dex, about, you know, the plant growing through the concrete, and that's exactly the kind of thing he's talking about. The flowers will bloom even on the desert floor, even in the desolation of the Arctic plain. There are footprints, which means there is life there. So even when it seems like we can't leave our mark, someone does, and that mark is there. That maybe we just didn't realize that we left behind, and we can live in unbelievable circumstances. I really enjoyed the imagery of skin like parchment of a forgotten diary, weathered, fading, with stories lost. Oh, that makes me want to like have like writing tattoos that when I'm really old will just be like wrinkled parchment. I know you're supposed to be like afraid of your tattoos wrinkling, but I actually think that's brilliant. So I will
yeah,
be
that is
old
a great
lady
part.
Who you have to read my hands. I thought that was beautiful.
Yeah, that was cool. Great comment. And Pam, if you're back, if you would like to finish that comment.
Yeah, well, I always used to joke around that I was going to get a tattoo of a giraffe on my boobs, so as they stretched it down as I got older, the giraffe would get longer. Absolutely.
I love you, Pam.
I thought of Faziana's comment, but I really like what Faziana had to say about the poem. And I really like how this was about finding one's own personal light. And as I was saying, and I don't know if it got heard, but that the golem is a creature without a soul, controlled by somebody else. And so it really feels like the idea of personal growth, of finding yourself, of finding your own light. And I really like how by the end of it, this person realizes that they have a spirit of fire. And I like the phrase through open naked windows, because to me that makes me think of the eyes and the idea that the flame of the soul is seen through the eyes. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
I love that comment, Pam, what you just said about the eyes, that flame through the eyes. That's a great comment.
Yes,
Pam,
great
will
comment,
you read
Pam.
Would you read for us the poem by Neutron Bomb, please, Pam?
I would be happy to. This is Live to Fight an... Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I forgot to say. This is for Dexter's contest from the last show. It's a carryover with the Mind Games with Yourself. Okay, go ahead, Pam. Sorry to interrupt.
All right. Live to Fight Another Day by Neutron Bomb. The aluminum shed in our courtyard is indented. Separation drips from the blemishes like the picture of Dorian Gray. It is an epitaph for my very fury. A 6-kilo weight gnashes at the metal encasement as I howl at the crescent moon, which remains sheltered by the night sky. They will say my mind is ornate, gifted, if you will, in the tricks it facilitates. But those rocks that are hurried my way and the sticks that leave splinters in my feet are privy to the undertaking of a deranged human, taught to mimic, poke, and prod the predator to elicit a response. I joust with the palpitations the chills down my spine, pouring ink onto silken screens to process the rage infarction inflicting my brain. End poem.
Fantastic read, Pam. And Faziano, why don't you start with comments on this one?
This has the classic neutron bomb, dark, edgy beauty. I love her writing. I like the Dorian Gray reference, and that part right after that's my favorite. It is an epitaph for my buried fury. That's such an amazing line. Well, two lines really, but that idea of burying your anger and then having that the indent in the courtyard in the aluminum represent that. It's like the gravestone of your fury, where you can see that's where it lived. That's where it rested. It's a brilliant concept of showing that anger, and the idea that the sticks that leave splinters. So that part reminds me of the like sticks and stones will break my bones, but words will never hurt me. But they will. They will leave splinters within you as well. This is intense in that wonderful way that Neutron manages in her writing.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah. You know, this one is great as far as for the prompt is life is a mind game. Decide what game you're going to play with your mind. You know, because on here that she talks about, they will say my mind is ornate and gifted, if you will. You know, when you kind of know that you're different or, you know, in a little ways off, that to you can sometimes mean two different things when your mind is playing with you. That could come off as almost maybe they're being insulting when they say that you're gifted. Could they be kind of mocking you in a way? Could they be kind of coming off as just to, like she says on here, to prod the predator, you know, poke and prod the predator just so they can get some kicks out of you and pump you up to do this. All of which could all be wrong, and they could just be honestly be telling the truth that they think that you're a gifted mind. But when your mind is kind of crazy like that, that it can start running with, well, what do they mean by that? And it starts to run, and you start to doubt the intent of that entire comment. And I don't know, that was just the way that I kind of interpreted this, and I thought that this was just a brilliant write. And not to blow up, live, you know, back to the title, live to fight another day, maybe not blow up on them and just move past that comment. So it's a real mind screwing or whatever when you struggle with taking a compliment. But fantastic write by Neutron Bomb and very well done. Pam, what did you think about this write?
Well, this is, of course, as always, top-notch poetry from Neutron. I really like where she says, as I howl at the crescent moon which remains sheltered by the night sky, to me there's almost a sense of jealousy or being envious of the moon which gets to hide away from all the troubles, you know, that the human heart has to, then the human mind has to deal with. In my fear, and where she says, I did like where she mentioned the sticks that leave splinters and in my feet are privy to the undertakings of a deranged human taught to mimic, poke, and prod the predator. There's that whole idea, I think, of the in those lines, I think, is the strongest idea of the games that we play with our own minds. There really is a struggle to maintain oneself and within this and to keep that anger down. But I also see that a real sense of healing in this, in the last three lines, that last stanza, where it becomes, you know, all about using your writing to process the rage that engulfs the brain. So just an excellent write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah, I thought that this was a very good write, and thank you, Neutron, for submitting it. It looks like, Faziana, you have posted the next one.
Yes, can you read that, please, Dex?
Absolutely. This is Listening to Heart Patters by Isabella G. It goes like this. These thoughts swim through my mind, doing backstrokes and deep dives. He doesn't want you. No one ever will. How could they? I watch him flash his smile at others, showing how much he cares. Why doesn't he do that to me? Do I even exist? I try to block out these thoughts and listen to my heart patters instead. I will always be louder, no matter how hard your heart beats. End poem. And Pam, why don't you give us first comments on that?
Oh my goodness, this is just really a raw, emotive brevity. I like the straightforward style. I like how it's about those self-doubts that constantly bombard us. And, you know, sometimes if your mind is saying, you know, somebody doesn't like you and you're, like if you're in a relationship with them, you know, you might want to consider, you know, do you see changes in their behavior that indicate, yeah, maybe they don't no longer like you. But a lot of times, you know, it's simply this kind of those repetitive phrases like he doesn't want you, no one will ever, how could they, our own minds attacking ourselves. And I like how she says, I try to block out all these thoughts, you know, because you're not going to always be able to do it 100% of the time. You know, I know personally I'm constantly bombarded with self-doubt. But you can try, and there are times where you will succeed, and the beat of your heart and every positive thing that you can think of will be louder than that doubt that tears you up inside. So just a wonderful brevity and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. And Faziana, what do you think?
I thought this was powerful, and I agree with Pam that I liked its directness. I liked the question, do I even exist? And I think that has two layers to it. There's, do I exist to him? Does he notice me? There's also this feeling of, do I exist at all? Like, do I exist to anyone? Am I just invisible? Because sometimes you can feel that way, especially if you're just insecure. It doesn't necessarily mean that nobody is paying attention to you. It's just you have that sense that nobody remembers that you're there. So I think that that's a powerful question to be asking yourself. And for the I will always be louder no matter how hard your heart beats, once Pam was talking about it, I agreed with her interpretation that or was it you? Someone had said something about like it was like the anxiety was stronger than the good thoughts, or the good thoughts were stronger than the anxiety. That kind of makes more sense. But originally, I was thinking that it was that even if he did love her, her heart would always be louder than his heartbeat, because she would love the strongest, and her love might be overpowering of the people who don't love her as much. But now that you guys were talking about it, I think I was wrong about that part. Either way, I enjoyed this poem.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, I haven't spoke on it, and like I said, that's up for different interpretations, and and, you know, I think that it's just, you know, somebody's mind playing with them a little bit more than what their heart, you know, and everybody talks about their heart, you know, missing a, you know, skipping a beat when somebody said, you know, when the person they love says hi to you or whatever, or says that. I think that it's a matter of your, this is a great one as far as your mind playing tricks on you, because it's you catching on to this split instant of this person of your, you know, your lover or whoever saying hi to the waitress as she walks up to bring your food. and everything being concentrated into that second and missing out on the fact that your loved one is doing, you know, paying the bills, going to work, shows up and hugs you and kisses you, all of these things. And it's like all of that is over-skipped or over-missed for this one look. And I think that that's where that's referring to is almost is that her mind is always going to be louder than her heart in those moments. And her mind is the one that's playing the tricks on her, not her heart. And so I just thought that this was a very strong brevity and very well done. And on to the next one that we have here. Faziana, it looks like you have another one posted for us.
I do. So this is Cry for Help by My Angels 3. I call on thee to come to me. Hold me tight. Heal my heart. Bring peace to my body, mind, and soul. Wrap me in your comfort. I am falling fast without a net. Reach for me. Pull me back into your arms, back to safety. Nighttime is the worst. The world stands still. Silence is deafening. I close my eyes, trying to fight back the tears. I've battled all day. Pent up, hurt, and anger, the dam breaks. No one can see or hear my cries, my emotional burst. They do not understand all I hold inside. I cannot explain, so please don't ask. I wish I knew how, but alas, I cannot. This faceless demon holds on firmly, gripping my heart, squeezing it tight. The void of emptiness, the loneliness, and unanswered questions eat at my mind, driving me crazy. Stop the madness. Help me move on. I beseech you, please help me make it through another night. The new day, still grim, seems a little more manageable. Thank you, my dear friend, for holding my hand, seeing me through another dark night. I know in time my heart will heal. Until then, at least I know I have you as my friend. End poem.
Amazing write, by My Angel 3, but great read, Faziana. Pam, what do you want to start us on comments on this one?
Yeah, this is another heartfelt one. Oh, my goodness. I tell you, this one kind of threw me off because, you know, up until those last couple of stanzas, I really thought she was pleading out to somebody who had left a relationship with her and wasn't returning or had died, you know, because it really gave us, to me, a sense of calling out to somebody who wasn't going to be there. It even, to me, had a sense of very much a very spiritual sense in the first couple of lines. I call on thee to come to me. There's this idea of calling out to a higher power. But then, you know, I mean, and I liked it all the way through. To me, it really, and I like how she mentions it's worse at night, and she says, you know, the faceless demon holds on firmly, gripping my heart, squeezing it tightly. It really feels like a struggle with depression that hits you hardest at nighttime. But then there's almost that this kind of light of joy in that last couple of stanzas of realizing that there was that person that was there for her, that person that to be her safety net when she needed it, her shoulder to lean on. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yes, I agree. That's a great comment, Pam. Faziano, do you want to, what's your comment on this one?
You know, I also liked the void of emptiness part and the faceless demon. I agreed with Pam that I think that was depression, and you know, that had a firm grip on her, and I like that it talks about the morning seeming a little more manageable. You know, it's not this miraculous thing where now that it's sunlight, everything's fine. There's still struggle, but sometimes it's manageable, and I think that's the first step. I, too, thought that it was maybe a spiritual thing. About the first half of it, I thought she was talking to God. And then at the end, you know, reaching out to a friend. And I think that's a really strong ending because, you know, when we are depressed, reaching out to a friend is so important. And it's a hard thing to do sometimes to acknowledge what's wrong. Or even sometimes, you know, saying that you're struggling, people want to know why. And you, like she says at the beginning, she can't explain it. And she wishes that she could, but she just can't even grasp it herself. Sometimes you're not sad for a particular reason. It's just, you know, it could be a chemical imbalance. It could be something that, like, you don't even know. It's not a specific thing. So having to explain that is really hard. But having the strength to reach out to a friend and just have someone be there for you to get them to get you through the night, that's important. So I think this is a really valuable right.
Great comment. And the prompt that this was written to was, that's my problem. I think too much and I feel too deeply. What a dangerous combination. And, you know, it can be a dangerous combination when you're sitting there, you know, by yourself. And yeah, can be taken, I think, a few ways. I do think that you guys are correct as far as them reaching out to a friend. I think that it could almost be, it could almost be in a spiritual way too, though, you know, where this is a mind game with yourself and you finally, you know, the friend could almost be poetry. The friend could be some type of self-soothing thing in a way as well. The faceless demon holds me deep, though, is holding on firmly is a very strong way to word it. And, you know, and just to be able to hold on for another night through another dark night, just a very, very emotional rite, which fits the prompt perfectly. But yeah, the way that it finished was just on such a positive note, just a very, very, very deep gripping right from top to bottom. So very well done.
I think gripping is a good word for it. Pam, would you please read the one by Adilts?
I would be happy to. All right. This is Mind Games by Adilts 7881, and it goes like this. Talk to myself from far away, listen deeply, but hear nothing whisper back. My dialogue is a soliloquy that only I can hear. Stars shine bright right above me, but they're not for me. All I see is what's in front of me. It's something dark and devouring, my reflection, my shadow, my suffering, a mirage of strength I feel inside of me. My mind's eye is clouded obscurity. And I find I'm wallowing in my own illusion. I want to transform. I want to shed my skin. I want to be an edge crusher and drill into the other side. I want to transmogrify, do what it takes to step through. End poem.
Great read, Pam. And, yeah, this is a very interesting write. It's a very dark write. Talk to myself from far away, listen deeply, but hear nothing whisper back. That's, to me, kind of a little bit of a recipe as far as, you know, for disaster or something that's very, very tough because I feel like this is her not willing to listen to her own good senses that she might have. You know, when you talk to yourself, you know, it's almost like you have some good senses and you know, you listen deeply, but you don't whisper back. And then it goes into my reflection, my shadow, my suffering, my mirage of self-strength I feel inside. My first take on this is that it's almost like no matter how much she tells herself, you know, you are beautiful, you are this, it's almost like something about her almost refuses to listen. And that the ending is kind of chilling. You know, do what it takes to step through, you know, step through to the other side. I don't know, but this is a very powerful brevity and very well done. Faziana, what do you think about this?
At the beginning, I saw that as disassociation. Talk to myself from far away. So there's this disassociative state where you kind of like watch yourself from a distance, and it feels like your life is just a movie that you're observing and you're not actually the one experiencing it. And so that's kind of what I saw there when it said from far away. And it's like you can't even reach yourself. You feel outside of your own life, not even hearing back from yourself. And then the dialogue as a soliloquy I found was really interesting because it's, you know, it's just you kind of pontificating in front of the crowd, but not anyone in the scene. You're not really a part of things. Again, you're aside. So there's that disassociation happening. I really liked the line, I want to transform, I want to shed my skin, I want to be an edge crusher. I think there's a lot of strength in that, and it's like realizing that you need to make changes and that it's going to be painful, you know, when an animal sheds its skin. That I see that as like, you know, not a comfortable transition. Wanting to be an edge crusher. I don't know, like you sounded, Dex, like you thought that the end was scary, like stepping through to another life. But I don't think it was as in like dying. To me, it's like stepping through the hard times and making your way to the other side of that quicksand and making it through to solid ground again. I think that there's hope.
Well, I like your interpretation better than mine. So, Pam, what do you think about this, right?
Well, I have to say, first of all, I'm really glad that Faziana commented first because, you know, with her mind, she was able to connect with the disassociation that's so obviously there in the first line of the parts. You know, because to me, my thought was that the person didn't like themselves. You know, that they really wanted to stay away from themselves. But when you and Faziana started talking about the disassociation, I was like, oh my gosh, that makes so much sense. The edge crusher, I believe, and I could be wrong, has to do with connect with the song by the same name by Fear Factory, in which the pre-chorus says, inflict strain upon the structure collapsing below my pressure, inflict strain upon the structure collapsing below my pressure. And it's a song that I highly recommend checking out the lyrics, you know, obviously after the show, because I think I see a strong connection with the lyrics of the song and her use of edge crusher, you know, wanting to be something of strength that tears apart. And I like this all the way through, and I like that she wrote, it's all I see is what's in front of me. It's something dark and devouring, my reflection, my shadow, my suffering. It's a difficult thing when we can't see beyond our own shadows, beyond our own suffering, to what's out there in the rest of the world. So really just a powerful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam, and thank you for the insight on pointing out the band and pointing out that song. That was something that I wouldn't have picked up on.
Same. I did not realize about the song, so it's always nice to have someone who catches these things. You've been hanging out with Rex, Pam.
Yeah, for a whole 2 years.
The two of you are just on it for the references, I swear. I need you to come to my trivia nights with me, like the pub trivia. Oh, I suck at the
man.
Music category.
I wish I could. That would be fun. Well, I was going to say, you know, if me and Rex could be hanging on the phone with you, maybe we could do that.
Yeah, phone a friend.
There you go. Only we wouldn't give each other answers. We'd just be, I will tell you that I am a very competitive person. When I used to play Uno with my son when he was younger, I used to smack talk him. I would smack talk a 9-year-old playing Uno.
I love that.
That's hilarious.
My mom
that's
is
hilarious.
The same. Yeah. I love that. I learned how to lose. So many kids, like, their parents let them win. No, my mom was super competitive. We used to play croquet in the backyard, and, you know, like, if you hit someone's ball, you can, like, do a thing where you, like, knock them, like, out of bounds. And like, you do that, like, every time. Like, I had no hope. Ruthless.
Oh, my God, that's funny.
You're that mom. I love it.
Yep.
That is great. It looks like this is the last one from the first contest. Is that correct?
That's right.
Okay, who would you like
to
read this one? Oh, we have a SoundCloud.
Let me look. Diane D? No, I don't.
Oh, okay, so we didn't get it loaded.
No, I'm sorry. I only have Martha's SoundCloud.
Oh, okay. I can give this a read.
Yeah, that'd be great.
Okay, this is The Heart to the Mind by Diane D. We all partake in mind games, if with ourselves or others. Humans with a heart and mind plays games with one another. Inside my waking self, there are two separate, unique voices. My feeling heart and thinking mind, demanding I make choices. My mind once said to hurt myself. My heart refuses to do it. My mind said, why, when life is hard? My heart said, we walk through it. My heart wants me to feel the pain. My mind says, don't waste time. My heart knows if we feel the pain, that this will help the mind. My mind says, don't trust people. It's mind games that they play. My heart says, without people, this is just another day. Sometimes there's something I regret. But the mind, it stands to reason well and says we will get it yet. So if you find your heart and mind will not work as one, remember you're still learning. The day is yet to come. End poem. And we'll start with you, Afasiana, on this one. What did you think about this write?
Well, I think this is strong. It has that conflict between the mind and the heart. It has a lot of repetition that kind of creates a sense of continuity, and I find it interesting because I feel like I don't know. I'm backwards because it would be like the heart who says to hurt itself, and the mind who reasons out of it. But it's the opposite here. So I don't know, I find that really interesting that I would have done it the opposite way. And that's no critique of her, it's just I like that there's, you know, other perspectives on things. I think that it's great to have that debate within yourself about things and have the recognition that there are two sides to how you're feeling. There's your logical side and then your feelings. And sometimes your brain is not actually so logical and needs to be, reasoned with from the heart. I have this one friend, and we were talking in high school many, many years ago about making a decision, and she was like, well, my one brain says this, and then my other brain says that, and we had a good laugh about her having two brains, but really I think one of them was her heart, and this poem just made me think about that conversation, and how even the serious things, if you look at it the right way, you can kind of laugh it off and come to a good conclusion.
Great comment, Afasiana. And Pam, what did you think about this write?
Yeah, I really liked this one. I have to agree with Afasiana that the repetition really made it cohesive, and the idea that it's that struggle of going back and forth between the two thoughts, the heart and the mind, the thoughts that want to not trust people, the thoughts that, want to hurt yourself, and the other that says, this you need other people in your life. You need to learn to trust people, and you need to learn to trust yourself. I just think this is absolutely a wonderful write and very well done.
I agree. There's some very powerful parts of it. My heart wants me to feel the pain. My mind says, don't waste time. My heart knows if we feel the pain, then this will help the mind. That's such a strong part because, when you do have that heartbreak or you do have that pain that you experience, it's so easy, especially nowadays, people go onto social media or people go to drugs. People go to these other things. The mind says, don't waste time with this heartache. And there's a whole lot of ways that you can try and nowadays that there are that you can try and get your mind off of it. But that's still just a quick, that's not even a fix. That's just, trying to put a piece of chewed bubble gum in a leaking dam or something, right? And so your heart knows that it has to go through the pain. And then the stanza that Pam pointed out that, your heart knows that you do need people, even how much your mind can kind of tell you to not trust anyone. So I would tell everybody to go check out the SoundCloud by Diane D. I'm sorry that we missed that. But I thought that this was a fantastic piece and a great addition to the contest. So thank you for submitting that, Diane. And on that note, Faziana, why don't you take us to the next one?
All right. So from now on, it's going to be from my contest, which is part two. And I'm just going to quickly say the quotes that were the prompts for that contest. The first one is, avoid people who blame you for wanting the same things they ask for. Prompt two is, run from people who say, you are so lucky to be with me. If you really are, he won't need to remind you. That's by Emma Xu. Prompt three, pay attention when people react with anger and hostility to your boundaries. You have found the edge of where their respect for you ends. Prompt four, you never look good trying to make someone else look bad. So those are the prompts, and now I'm going to read a poem by Daniel DeShino. We did hear from him earlier from the previous contest, but this is the one for the current contest. All right. On What We All Travel by Daniel DeShino. Oh, to contemplate the humbleness I am when simple fatigue and rattled bones bring contemplation to halt at an unscalable wall. Why can I not, as kings be like, to rise above the common man? The kings I see on polished throne, on lightened stage, with smiling might. I will then wonder, when leave do they, what thoughts they have, what lives they live. Do they stare at winter stars and wonder of a living universe? Are they scared of the demons that they hide within? And do they look in the mirror and wonder who they see? Age brings wisdom to those who look, and mirrors I see now more in eyes than glass. All the same, just different paths. In the words that I hold dear, words that flow from all who live, like rain from clouded minds, to fall to earth, to nurture and grow, or flood the streets and fester in sewers. Those words I have learned to choose wisely and ignore those with false claims. Geniuses are declared, celebrities are assembled, status is proclaimed, winners are lifted. But wisdom has brought the purity of light. Commonality I see in those announced great, greatness shines in the common man. And to those who rise above the rest, I walk beyond and wish them well. End poem.
Great read, and great read of Faziana, and great write, Daniel. Pam, why don't we start with you on comments on this one?
I really like this one. I like how he starts out with, "Oh, to contemplate the humbleness I am, when simple fatigue and rattled bones and contemplation the hulk of an unscalable wall." And what I feel that is the general vibe of this is that we all have our wisdom. We all have our gifts. And for those of us that remain humble, we will end up getting that wisdom that comes with age. But so many people think that, you know, that because society or fans have declared them a genius, they've found true wisdom in the moment, in the highlight of their 15 minutes of fame, when really just like anybody else, they have a lot of growing to do. I really like, in the words that I hold dear, words that flow from all who live like rain, from clouded minds to fall to the earth to nurture and grow. I like how the idea that the words we put out there can help us to nurture and grow. And geniuses are declared, celebrities are assembled, status is proclaimed, winners are lifted. And that's that part where I feel most about best speaks about the whole idea of the bloated ego that people get because they are lifted up by those who admire them into an almost godlike status. So really a wonderful thought-provoking write and very well done.
Great comment. And Faziana, what did you think?
I think this really felt like a classic poem. Like, as I was reading it, it felt like an old, like, professional poem from long ago. It just, it had this feel to it, like, I don't know, it had an eloquence and a flow that felt like I was, like, reading out of, like, a book of poetry. It's amazing to me that this is, like, submitted to our contest. I really liked the part that says, "And mirrors I see now more in eyes than glass." So it's talking about how we judge ourselves based on what other people see. You know, they are the how we think about what we look like and who we are, and our value is being seen as in the reactions of others, maybe live and maybe in, say, like social media, where how many likes did I get on that picture? And that's what they're seeing more than looking in the mirror and really thinking for themselves about themselves. I thought that that was a very deep stanza.
Great comments. And, I thought that this, like you said, was a very almost classical write in itself. You know, the stanza I just loved was, "Geniuses are declared, celebrities are assembled, status is proclaimed, and winners are lifted. But wisdom has brought the purity of light." It's just a very stunning piece by Daniel, and I thought that this was just a fantastic write for the prompt and for the contest. So thank you, Daniel, for writing it and submitting it. And so where are we heading to next, Ephesiana?
I have a SoundCloud for Martha Gettle, so I posted that, and I'm going to play.
Worthless advice. Do you have anything but worthless advice? Before you speak, do you even think twice? Do you just like the sound of your voice? You know gossip is considered a vice. So I don't want to even hear from you. I doubt that anything you say is true. You are always speaking out of turn. Gossiping is what you like to do. You love to gossip, this I know. You are always there for the show. You stand here in front of me, and I wonder just how far you'll go. Keep your advice, I don't want to hear it. Gossiping is something I long ago quit. You've got that monkey on your shoulder, and I won't listen to you is a safe bet. You love to gossip, this I know. You're always there for the show. You stand here in front of me, and I wonder how far you'll go. So you can just walk away. I won't hear a thing you have to say. It's in one ear and out the other. But for your vices, someday you'll pay.
Fantastic, right, Martha? And amazing SoundCloud. I just always love it when she sends in a SoundCloud and has her songs. Faziana, why don't we start with you on this one?
Well, first of all, I do appreciate that she's been giving us SoundClouds for everything. I like to hear things in the poet's own voice because I wouldn't know what tune to put it to, so that's very helpful. I like this attitude of, you know, not letting someone gossip to you because it's one thing to not be a gossip yourself, but, you know, if you're listening and then, you know, it ends up being that you become gossiping too, because you know, if people come to you and talk about it, if you engage in that conversation, then you're being just as bad. And sometimes it's hard when you're kind of the secondary gossiper to have the, you know, the bravery to tell your friend, like, I don't want to talk about this, and not give in to that. So I think it's really a strong thing here of, you know, stepping away from the gossip, from that toxic person, and recognizing that what they're speaking might not be the truth, and that they need to do something better, and you can be better by not giving into this. I think I really liked her attitude and her message here.
Great comment, Ephesiana. And Pam, what did you think about this write?
Yeah, I too really like the attitude in this, especially in the first four lines where it's like basically where she says, do you just like the sound of your own voice? You know, is that the only reason you're talking? And I too really keyed in on how she was standing up to this person about no longer wanting to hear their gossip. It isn't just about I keep your advice to yourself. It's about, you know, keep your gossip to yourself. And I particularly like where she said, gossiping is something I long ago quit. You've got that monkey on your shoulder that I won't listen to you is a safe bet. You know, and so she's acknowledging, you know, the person in the song is acknowledging that at one point gossip was a problem for them. And so they're learning to keep away from people that cause that kind of a caustic environment. So just really an excellent write and very well done.
Yeah, I agree. I really enjoyed the whole aspect and just the whole soul and and everything that she brought to behind this. You love to gossip. This I know. You are always there for the show. You stand here in front of me, and I wonder how far you'll go. You know, just when somebody's just spouting off, you know, they lose all of their credibility and they lose everything that kind of makes them up as a person. You know, I just thought that this was just very well done by Martha, and just a beautiful write and a beautiful SoundCloud. So, Faziana, where does this bring us to next?
There's one by Thomas B. that I think you would be a good voice for, Dexter.
Okay. This is Truth and Forevers by Thomas B. As articulate as a snow in June, it started as we drove into D.C. on the way to Carlisle and Grandma. Mom was frantic. We were all mesmerized. Life never follows the rules. We all laughed at the retelling. She didn't. I noticed there was one more brought home, checked out, found wanting. There's more to life than romance. Love is larger. Infatuated, such a great imitation. I've sat at dinners with her parents. I've listened while she tried to make excuses. I knew she knew. The hardest truths are the ones we don't want to hear. Sometimes you just wake up, realize you have been lying. You can't fake it till you make it. Your partner deserves more. And it is not you. It is okay. Practice flights. Before you get your pilot license, you'll be ready when it's time. Spread your wings and fly. End poem. Faziana, why don't we start with you on comments on this?
All right. You know, in the beginning, I was a little bit confused. I was curious, you know, what happened during that drive that everyone laughed at and she didn't. Like, I wanted to know more about it. I'm intrigued, but I feel like I'm missing a part of the story. I really liked the part where it talks about you can't fake it till you make it. You know, for some things, like love, you know, maybe you want to like a certain person because you think that it would be a smart match, it would be a good relationship. But if you don't feel it, pretending is not going to make you feel it. I thought that was a wise thing. And then also the practice flights before you get your pilot license. You know, sometimes you have to go on the bad dates. You have to have a failed relationship to know what a good relationship is, to feel the difference later on. And that's true of so many things. One of my favorite books for kids is Rosa Revere Engineer, and it's sort of about, like, you make mistakes, and that's okay, and you can learn from those mistakes and start a new project that works out better. And I think that this is kind of about that in terms of, like, relationships. Sometimes it flops, and that's okay.
Great comment, Faziana. And Pam, what did you think about this write?
I really liked this one. I'm wondering if the beginning stanza is to be taken literally. Like, you know, occasionally in certain parts of the country, it will snow in early June, and it's possible that it just was early June. They were on a trip. It started snowing. The mother was panicking because she knew they didn't have snow tires because she wasn't expecting it, and the kids just thought it was all wonderful. So it was really a kind of the idea of perspective. But I don't know if that's literal or it's supposed to be taken metaphorically, but either way it makes for a really good metaphor for the whole idea that we can't always control what's going to happen in life. We can't you know, always know that, that snow is going to come in June. And I like how this write is about that whole idea, as Afegiziano was mentioning, of that failed relationship. And I like where he says, sometimes you just wake up, realize you've been lying, you can't fake it till you make it, your partner deserves more, and it is not you. It's that idea that suddenly realizing that both of you are not right for each other, that both of you need to move on. And I, too, like that the very strong lines all the way through, but especially in the end where it says, you know, when the time is right, you can spread your wings and fly. You know, when the time is right, you can find that relationship that you're meant to be in. So really just a wonderful write and very well done.
Yeah, I great comment, Pam, and I think that's a great point. I think that, you know, you do have to go through a certain amount of BS and stuff with other people until you finally get to somebody that you can appreciate and finally find that person that you know, that you can give your all to, and that not only are you the polished lover, but also that, you know, you can expect that too. You know, practice flights before you get your pilot license, and you'll be ready for when it's time. You know, you have to go through maybe a certain amount of humbling yourself also, you know, into be able to find the right lover. Or to be able to just appreciate that person that much more. So I thought that this was a fantastic write by Thomas and very well done for the prompt and the contest. So where are we heading to next, Afegiziano?
We have one by Diane D. Pam, are you able to read that one?
Yes, I am. And this is Life Cycle of a Mind Game by Diane D. And it goes like this. Once a lie is out there and believed, it lives, and then it becomes. As the lie gets bigger, you get smaller and smaller, like a cubicle within a cubicle within a cubicle. I believe that I told my first lie ever when I was able to say the first yes or no. My stomach swelled enough for the lie to go from a seed into a pumpkin. There is no fear like telling a lie fear. When you get that stomach drop sensation where you know that if you breathe, it's real and you may be discovered. Then that lie begins to gnaw at your brain because it's the only way out truly keeps a secret. It is also is to also hide from yourself. Like unseeing a spider, you cannot untell a lie. There is the lie that is so close to the truth that nobody would ever be sure. That little white lie, the one where you learn to tell a truth as though it were a lie. And now, like the inside of that pumpkin, when you open that half-truth up, it becomes a slippery, slimy string of seed lies that spread like chicken pox in preschool classrooms. Then while me and the lie grew, we both took on depth. Dishonesty was currency, and I prospered. Yes, you can redecorate the cellar to give the illusion of truth, but you are still in a cellar where half-truths exploded into comfortability, infested with malignancy, like a grumpy brush fire. The more the lie is fueled, the larger it gets until it explodes into an out-of-control wildfire. Then came the mind games. I lie to them. They know I'm lying. I know that they know I am lying. I was lying to keep them. They kept keep pretending to believe me, like cycles of a mind game. Before becoming a slave to a lie that feels like you have walked years carrying a torch that you must keep burning, let that torch burn out and find the freedom to walk towards the truth where you will find light. End poem.
Great read there, Pam, and great write here by Diane. Afegiziano, what did you think about this one?
I love, love, love the pumpkin metaphors. That one little seed of a lie that grows into a pumpkin, it feels like it's taking over your stomach. I can think of that feeling, that it's like you physically feel that guilt. Even if it wasn't a big lie, I am the absolute worst at lying. I can't lie. I can't even, like, lie to be nice. I have no face that can hide things, even if I don't say anything, because I'm like, if you don't say anything nice, don't say anything at all. You can tell when I am lying in my mind. I can't do it. So I really love that. And I love when you open up the half-truth, and the way it describes a slippery, slimy string of seed lies that spread like chicken pox. The seed lies, I like that. One lie leads to a whole bunch of other lies that lead to other lies, and those seeds grow into problems. That is so brilliant. That pumpkin metaphor totally made the poem for me.
Great comment, Faziana. Yeah, I thought that this was a fantastic write. Well, then while that me and that lie grew, we both took on depths. Dishonesty was currency, and I prospered. Yes, you can redecorate the cellar to give the illusion of truth, but you are still in a cellar. What a powerful stanza. This was just incredible writing all the way through. This is just a stellar write. Life cycles of a mind game. Just everything from the title all the way down. So very well, Diane D. In this write. Pam, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I really like this. It's like a darker, more twisted adult version of When You Give a Mouse a Cookie. It's and the whole idea that she goes through the different types of lies and how, to me, what really got me is the weird near the end where she talks about, you know, lying because you want to keep people as friends or having to keep up with the lie. And then I like how she describes the lie as a torch that you're carrying that you must keep burning, but it's like, you know what, let the torch burn out. And then walk towards the truth, because when you walk towards the truth, that's when you're going to find the real light. And, you know, just absolutely. I also liked the phrase grumpy brush fire. I really felt that added to it, not just say a brush fire, but a grumpy one. So that was really cool. Excellent write and very well done.
Pam, have you ever read If you Give a Mouse an iPhone?
I have not. I didn't even know that book existed.
It's kind of like a parody version of If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, but it's really funny, and it's actually kind of like about missing out on life because you're, you know, stuck with your phone in your face. So you give the mouse an iPhone, and then all these amazing things are happening around him, and he doesn't even notice. He's just, like, staring at the phone the whole book, and, like, great things are happening, and he's accidentally, like, walking off cliffs and, like, almost eaten by an alligator and, like, goes through all this trouble, and the whole time, like, you're in the audience going, no, no. And then, I mean, like, okay, it's meant for small children, so you're not supposed to have the suspense that I do. But when I read it to the kids, I'm dramatic. But he just misses it all because he has a phone. And then he ends up on this little desert island, and he has his phone battery dies, and he looks up and he's like, where am I?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that sounds like a great one.
Oh, it's so fun. We did it for Unplug and Play week here. I was like, you know, you're supposed to go a week without using technology with your kids. And we did it as a story walk. So you have to, like, you run or you dance or whatever to get to the next thing. Sorry, I'm off on a tangent, but I just love that book.
Very cool.
Great comment, Faziana. With that being said, where are we heading to next?
I'm going to do mine. So this is called Reciprocity, and it's by me, Faziana. My instinct is to be... I'm messing up my own poem already. The prompt is, avoid people who blame you for wanting the same things they ask for. My instinct to be supportive sets precedent, taken advantage of to the full extent. He asks more and more, never content. But if I need help, well, that he'll resent. For him, I'm on call, no matter the time. But if I need a moment, that's like a crime. I'm happy to hold his pain, to offer my ear. All that I ask is that he respond to my tear. I've seen this before, this one-way side street. Charming when he needs me, but it's deceit. One like him once had me kneeling in defeat, but I'm learning which numbers I need to delete. Simple.
Great comment, or great write, Afasiana. Pam, why don't you start off with comments on this one?
Oh, I really like this. I think reciprocity is a perfect one-word title for this poem. This has, as always, wonderful rhyme and flow to it. I like this all the way through, especially like the lines in the middle stanzas that says, I'm happy to hold his pain to offer my ear. All that I ask is he respond to my tear. The idea that, I'm happy to be there for you, but when I'm the person that's having those sad moments, those, you know, feeling like I'm going to fall apart moments, I need you to be my rock. And if they can't be that, then, you know, it's, and I also really like where he said, charming when he needs me, but it's deceit. That really describes very well a narcissistic personality. And, of course, you know, the finality of, but I'm learning which numbers I need to delete. You know, sometimes we will tend to keep numbers in our phones in hopes that maybe things will change, but oftentimes it's like you really just need to get rid of any way to contact that narcissist. So just a wonderful write and very well done.
Great comment, Pam. Yeah. I think you hit the nail on the head. For him, I'm on call no matter what the time, but if I need a moment, that's like a crime. You know, I'm happy to hold his pain, to offer my ear. All I ask is he respond to my tear. You know, when you just start to recognize it's such a one-way street. And, it ties into the prompt so well. Avoid people who blame you for wanting the same thing they ask for. It's you want a minute and you need this help and you need this shoulder to cry on. And then they're not willing to be there for you in those moments. Just a very fantastic brevity that you wrote here, Faziana. Just a very well done piece.
Thank you, both of you. And Dex, what should we read next?
What we have here next is we have this one by Seed Haven, and I will give this one a read. Okay, this is two narcissists who called herself my friend. Lips like lilies, dripping sorrow over razor wire smile. Break me into lies and fit them to your mosaic. Frame your creation in gold gilt. Cage me like the little bird you think I am. Slice my words apart and stitch them to your skin in the order you prefer. Tell the assembled that this is the real me. Behold the temptress, lush in oils, pressing dew kisses fruit to her lips and the hearts of men. Behold the virgin, frozen in marble, unreachable to the hands of the gods and the hearts of men. Change me to suit your audience. An empty vessel. Let me hold your rage before it rots you. Too late, too late. Take your ink from my veins and write yourself a mirror. It will always speak the truth. I never hurt you with lies, darling, only with the truth. You'll never look beautiful in the looking glass you made of me. End poem.
Wow, this is incredible. I was, like, speechless for a minute there. I really love the way that this talks about how the narcissist projects on the person who they're manipulating. And you see that in the looking glass you made of me. I really liked how slice my words apart and stitch them to your skin in the order you prefer, about how they can manipulate what you say to mean something else, and it changes the perspective, the perception of you. I liked that it talked about changing to suit the audience. So he'll describe her to some people as the temptress and to some people as the virgin, and use her as a way to look better himself to whatever group he's with. He's going to change it. So, like, I'm with this person who is, you know, whatever that audience thinks is the ideal, and or is the opposite of the ideal, depending on if he's trying to embarrass her or make himself look better. There's just, I have seen this happen, and it's incredibly described here, that kind of horrible feeling of you're just a prop. So this is an amazing piece. And Pam, what did you think?
I was just about to speak up and say, and who's supposed to comment next? But,
I'm sorry,
oh
I forgot we switched roles.
Well, I can imagine. Yeah, I kind of figured. But this is absolutely brilliant. Just powerful, hard-hitting lines. And I like that this is shown from the point of view a lot of the narcissists themselves, who acts like someone who makes them better, who acts, you know, like, as you said, that really, that was like, behold the temptress, behold the virgin, you know, and makes them into what they want them to be. I really like, break me into lies and fit them to your mosaic, frame your creation, gold, gilt, cage me like the little bird you think I am. And I also like, I always speak the truth. I never hurt you with lies, darling, only with the truth. And that is, you know, and that is one of those things that I've been through before, where they think telling you, you know, all these truths that you need to hear to, you know, make you a better person or whatever, you know. It's like, and then they claim, well, you can't be mad at me, you can't be sad, because all I'm doing is speaking the truth, although oftentimes it's not even necessarily the truth, it's just their version of the truth. Just really, as I said, it's a powerful light, it's heartfelt, and I think this one just really just totally nails the prompt and is very well done.
I agree. And Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, this does a fantastic job of you know, kind of painting the picture of this whole thing, and it's kind of, it seems like, too, the painting that that this person tries, that the narcissist paints of the other person to everybody else, you know, they're always ahead of the curb, and, you know, and expressing the problems and talking about you behind your back and trying to shape everybody else's or change the way that things look to the audience rather than what they really are, or even care to discuss the problems with the person. It's like, here, let me tell my jaded side of the story to everybody else, and to try and express these truths or these truths that are in my mind, so that, you know, you can look like crap to everybody else and all the other friends and everything. It's just a very strong right and very well done.
And what should we do
next?
Next
we have, Next we have here is this one by called Juicy Comments by Gerald E. Green. And Pam, if I could get you to read this one here, I'm posting it now.
Absolutely. All right. This is Juicy Comments by Gerald E. Green. A whisper in the ear is one thing. Blurting out is quite another. Criticism has its place, but never in the gutter. Some choices show a lack of wisdom, people making bad decisions, causing us to squirm and scream about inane collisions. And when we see outlandish fashion, tongues can't stop or stay in place, wagging like a cutting sword, behaving with a dearth of grace. The roll of eyes or sneering gestures shows what lies behind fake smiles. When we choose to make things worse, expanding someone's trials. We revel in a piece of gossip, masticate in every morsel, tasting each delightful piece, delighting in a mouthful. But when we look into a mirror, seeing truth in every defect, attitudes should change, revise, reactions leading to respect. End poem.
Great read, Pam. Dex, can you give us the first comment?
I think that this is a very strong write. About somebody that's just kind of talking and, you know, in gossiping, behind people's backs. You know, it shows something greater about the person that is kind of speaking than it does about anybody else. We reveal in the piece of gossip that mastication every morsel, tasting each delightful piece, delighting in a mouthful. We in a lot of ways sometimes though we can get caught up in the gossip and make maybe a bad decision of wanting to hear and wanting to be a part of it. But this is just a great write and a very strong piece.
That was a great comment. I do love the word masticate. I feel like I never want to write chewing ever. I just always write masticating. it's just such a delightful word. I liked at the beginning, a whisper in the ear is one thing, blurting out is quite another. Because, like, you know, if someone had something in their teeth, for example, if you say, you know, like, oh, you might want to look in the mirror, you got something in your teeth, that's one thing. If you instead, at the boardroom table, say, oh, and look at Johnny over there and his teeth, that's quite the thing to wear to a meeting. Like, it's totally different than if you're pointing out in front of people loudly than if you're, you know, trying to be helpful and say it to them. There's criticism, and then there's criticism. And that's just like an obvious like physical example. But for other things too, you know, to subtly say something is very different than making it into a joke with other people. And I think that this is a strong statement about how, you know, there are different ways of handling situations. I really like the whole chewing on the piece of gossip part, because it's true. People get really involved in hearing the gossip. And I mean, I'm guilty of this sometimes. I try not to be the one spreading it, but, you know, sometimes I don't mind hearing it, and I'm not proud of that. And I think that is something that we need to consider, is like, what are we delighting in hearing about, and who is this hurting? It's something to think about. So well done, Gerald. And Pam, you read that for us very nicely. What did you think?
I really like this, and I too liked the beginning where it reminds us that criticism has its place, but never in the gutter. You know, if there is something like, you know, as you mentioned, food in the teeth or a stain on the shirt or whatever, you know, you know, take the person aside. You know, give them that little piece of advice or little, like, heads up. I like also where it says, when we see outlandish fashion, tongues can't stop or stay in place. And it's like, you know, to me that really speaks on how it's not our place to judge how somebody dresses. I remember seeing this quote that says something along the lines of, you know, if it's not something that can be fixed in 2 minutes or less, don't bring it up. Like if you see a lady who or someone who's on the heavy side wearing a shirt that you don't think is flattering for them, don't say something. They don't have another shirt they can change into. All you're going to do is make them feel bad about themselves. I really like the end too, where she says, but when we look into a mirror, seeing truth in every defect, that whole idea that before we judge other people, we need to take a good long look at ourselves, not only on the outside, but particularly also on the inside and what we have to offer the world. So excellent write and very well done.
Agreed. Where are we headed next, Dexter?
We are going to head to poem by Jim Bellamy. And if you would give that a read for us, Aphasiana.
Sure. Once Meant for Thinking by Jim Bellamy. I look down at the foaming and chordal shards, once meant for thinking. Lithium lay thick, but sent no light back through my guard. Slunk as it was in mists and mimes, slain sights and wired mistakes climbed up. Past tombs still gumming mists' corrective rites, I thought, I am mad. I am wrought in lost night. Misconception, for my bones slept, and my wrists swaggered up their hands, absolving and touched, and hung like a starved breath, the mind burns on, a thin point of incitement beneath its shards, the powerless dial of day flamingly spilled, my virtual world into the actual, my mad, bad world, like a dropping tear, slammed at my heels again, entombing my schizophrenic clutch, turning, I wished for another time so easy, for a further happy time, but rendered, pivoting, button as a coat of mindless girl. How could madness meet and lock and race like rivers, but never, never choose? Am I jealous of it? Will I forever confuse its rumors and ends with sanity, with sane things? This important life, is it at once part invalid, part rebel, part saint? Sweet madness is purely ethereal? End poem.
Great read, Aphasiana.
Thanks. And will you start our comments, Dex?
Yeah, this was a great piece here by Jim. Misconception, for my bones slept and my wrists swaggered up their hands, absolving and touched and hung like a starved breath, the mind burned on, a thin point of incitement beneath its shards. There's just a lot of fantastic imagery used and metaphor used in this piece throughout. But never choose. Am I jealous of it? Will I forever confuse its rumors and ends with sanity and sane things? This important life is at once part invalid, part rebel, part saint. Sweet madness. This is a... will you buy into it? Which side do you choose to go with? And where do you find your enjoyment, or where do you find, where do you want to kind of settle in, I guess, in your life within the madness? I thought that this was just a very good write by Jim Bellamy and very well done.
I agree. I thought this was just fascinating. I was kind of lost in his language and his phrasing. Just beautifully worded, but in a kind of like confusing, trippy way. And that's perfect for talking about the madness, because it kind of makes my mind spin to read it. And I think that's part of the beauty of it, is it has that kind of stream of consciousness feel where it jumps around a little bit, and those past tombs haunting with, I mean, it's hard to pick out a specific point of this because it all just flows together so well. I thought this was a very intelligent piece, very cerebral, and I would need more time to analyze it, to comment properly. I didn't pre-read this one, and I think that it has layers to it that I'd like to peel apart. Looks like Pam is back with us. Pam, were you able to read the poem?
I was, and I have to agree. He has a beautiful use of language. His writes are always complex. To me, you know, always layered. To me, I look at the general thought that comes to my mind is the idea of gaslighting, you know, and how we start to not trust our own mind because of being gaslighted. Now, I could be wrong, and, you know, it also seems also like kind of like the struggle with your own mind. The struggle with your psychological health. I like how this has a dark feel of wandering through that graveyard of the mind. I like misconception, for my bones slept and my wrists swaggered up their hands, dissolving and touched and hung like starved breath, the mind burned on. For some reason, that very much the imagery in that very much makes me think of a crucifixion and how when people were crucified back in ancient Rome or ancient, you know, like the ancient times, they died because they couldn't breathe. And there's almost, to me, within those lines, the idea of putting yourself up as the martyr. I think this is just a wonderfully thought-provoking write and very well done.
That was an excellent comment, Pam. Thank you. Now, Dexter, what are we going to... I see you posted mine, but I already did that. So is there another one that you'd like to read? Oh, no, you just posted... That's not mine. I saw my name. It's because you posted the link to the show. I'm so sorry, Dex. You're totally right.
No, it's okay.
Also, hello, Wichita Rick. All right, who would you like to read Kenny's poem?
Who just read the last one? Is that you or me?
It was me.
Okay, so I'll read the next one here by Kenny W. How ungrateful can you girls be? Got to say, I'm much too young for you, babe. I'm footloose and fancy free. You're just so lucky to be with me. Don't want to sound arrogant, no way, but I'm sure I've heard other people say he's much too good for her, though I don't mean that as no slur. One thing is, as you know, I'm so cool that with me you may well look like a fool, but so does everybody else, I guess, baby. But it's you don't look unfavorably. Another thing is, I'm such a sharp dresser, have a daily appointment with my hairdresser. You can't help but look a little scraggy next to me, your sugar daddy. And then there is my set of wheels. To every chick I see, this does appeal, nicknamed by all as my pimp mobile, proving round here I'm the big deal. When it comes to charm, you look no further. I'm a dude with sophistication and wherefore. Just take it as an undisputed fact. I am one unique class act. Reckon you wonder how I must stay so humble and make do with you without a grumble. It's because I'm so forgiving and embrace free living. Guess for you, this must be like dating a saint. What's your note says, it ain't. And that you've had enough, and I can't go get stuffed. End poem.
Thanks for that read, Dexter. And I see this as not Kenny's real perspective, but he's playing the role of the person. Because it says, run from people who say, you are so lucky to be with me. If you really are, he won't need to remind you. And so he's playing the role of that jerk. And I do not take that at all as Kenny actually being this persona. When I first read it, I was like, oh, like, and then I'm like, wait a minute. No, he's playing the role. So he played it well because for a second I believed it. And I was like, how dare you write this? You got me, Kenny. I think that's a compliment to your writing because it felt convincing. It carried that arrogance. You know, this is a thing that guys actually do where they try to make themselves look good by insulting you. And, like, I've even heard it on, like, sitcom TV shows where when the guys are trying to pick up girls who are out of their league, they do negs, which is like a negative compliment where you say like, okay, I can't think of an example, but it's like you say something mean and then kind of like act like it's a compliment. It's like, oh, well, you know, you're kind of chubby, but I like fat girls. Or like, your eyes are a little bit too far apart, but that's interesting. Or like, I don't know, like they insult you in a way that you're like, oh, well, maybe it's good that someone's paying attention to me. There's this weird thing of because they disapprove of you, you want their approval. It's nuts. I say as someone who dated someone like this. It's just that he brought this character to life in a way that was like triggering for me, but I felt like it was very, very well done. Good job, Kenny. Pam, what did you think?
Yeah, I totally hear what you're saying because I had that split few seconds where I, too, thought, what the heck? And I thought, oh, my God, he's going to have all the women of LNP up in arms carrying pitchforks and torches and heading to his house and, you know. But, yes, I have to say, I actually ended up laughing at this because it was a wonderful tongue-in-cheek write. He brought this type of personality to life. I really like another thing. Is I am such a sharp dresser, have a daily appointment with my hairdresser. You can't help but look a little scraggy next to me, your sugar daddy. There was wonderful rhyme and flow to this, wonderful humor. But it was humor used to look, which I liked, to look at a serious subject, which is the idea that eventually a person has enough of that narcissistic personality. They have enough and say, you know what, I'm not taking this anymore, and they walk away. So really just a wonderful, clever write and very well done.
I completely agree, and I'm glad I wasn't the only one who was like, get my torch and pitchfork. Watch out, Kenny. Dex, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought that this was a great write as far as just the angle and just very clever to kind of take this in. And I think that it just shows the caliber of the writer to be able to kind of drift into you know, this other character and really kind of take it on it from a personal perspective and take on the narrative of being this kind of the sugar daddy type of person. and it thinks that, you know, they're God's gift and all of these things. You know, it was just a very, very, very good write, entertaining, some parts almost kind of funny, but it's just a fantastic angle to take on the prompt, and very well done.
For sure. I think it was a brave write because he did risk getting some strong comments there if people didn't get that he was joking.
Yes, absolutely. And Pam, if I could get you to read the next one.
Absolutely. This is This Conflicted Mouthful of Blood by Maeve Word and A, and it goes like this. I have the memory of an elephant in the room. If ignorance is true bliss, I treat theirs like a Buddhist. I wish I could say that's what the truth is. I still have healing to do. I just wish earlier I knew this. On the people, they've helped me out so much. For how long I've bitten down on my tongue, I say, for how long I've bitten down on my tongue, I think it's time to spit out this conflicted mouthful of blood. Yeah, thicker than water is what these scars promote, subscribe to hardship, how the black sheep in a tribe of narcissists becomes a goat. Talk about being noble. You can't say I haven't tried to stay afloat, swimming in circles until I drift to paradise for my degrowth. I either allow myself to drown or be not afraid to rock the boat, to bite the hand that fed me, oh, to bite the hand that fed me. Like I should ignore the time they poisoned me in between conflicting if it meant sacrificing my dignity and go to hell with your oaths. How Christians like you tend to condescend with your modest image of perfection. I bet all the blessings I forgot to count on you forgetting to bring up that up in confession. Because you think trying to hold yourself accountable would be the penance. God forgives you nonetheless. Yes, the priest said so. Say only he can judge you, and sometimes he speaks through other people to justify why you're so judgmental. If that's the case, then God was never omniscient, and mountains of molehills is only a metaphoric description. This hierarchy system, the quiet narcissism where I find the harshest prism, pariah, targeted criticism, as lighthearted of retard's wisdom. Why are you getting defensive, bitch? You're asking me random-ass questions. This pent-up aggression has festered. The line is starting to blur on whether I'm holding a grudge or just keeping my distance from a behavior I want no part of. If it's reverse psychology, it'll be on the wrong side of history. Ask the history buffs. I believe there's a time and a place for tough love, but know the difference between that and an unnecessary. It's something I've needed to get off my chest because I'm tired of pulling punches with this wall and our arguments going insane, confrontational scenarios I make up inside my head. It's just me preparing to respond for the anxiety of it happening again. The battle between guilt and intuition, a test of endurance. I remember the self-righteous manipulation, the micromanaging, instead of teaching me the basics, the belittlement and the gaslighting that followed, then expecting a repeat. You get called out and shed the tears of a crocodile, deflect it completely. I remember when I was younger, I had a dream. I was in the backyard, and the night sky stars were falling away so drastically. As I got older, I saw things more clearly. I realized the five vultures to the right of me would represent my position in the family. The respect is maintained to the ones that remain in circles. It's because it's deserved, my mother being one of them, however. It's become a conflicting circumstance. Sure, for them, it's something sometimes convenient to have her deliver these words, but most of it is undeserved hurt, the communication skills of a bunch of effing cowards. Why it's conflicting, it concerns me. Why my mother still goes out of her way to deliver such words, family first, boundaries first. Yeah, to think about all the love they exhibit, it's out of touch to assist me, to help me up by giving. Without them once questioning how or what, getting down to the crux, especially around the subject of mental health, unsung opinions bound to be dumb, the pettiest outcomes, then I reach out for someone, they dismiss it as powering, huh, interesting. Now it's back in their face and spitting out this conflicted mouthful of blood. I've done nothing wrong. How is it I still empathize for my abusers, knowing it's because they probably had a rough upbringing? But it's like, come on. I've had more growth in the last few years than you've had your whole life, being 30 years older than me. The fact that you all treat me differently to inadvertently isolate me, and it backfired. It's been the most powerful soul-searching thing I've ever experienced because I stayed true to myself and never folded. I'm not biting my tongue anymore. End poem. Well, I would say after those 600 words, they're definitely not biting their tongue anymore. So,
no, thank you for reading that one, Pam.
You're welcome.
Yes, thank you. That was a mouthful, and you did a great job with it. The second half I got to hear, I had to step away for the first half, unfortunately. I really liked the battle between guilt and intuition, a test of endurance. And that is a test of endurance when you have different intuition than you have with guilt. And I really liked family first, boundaries first. Because, you know, to a certain extent, put your family first, but eventually, if it's harmful to you, you do have to set boundaries. And I like that strength there of boundaries first. Sometimes you have to do that. And I felt for the mother who's stuck in the middle, and then for the person who, while loving the mother, has negative feelings towards her because she ends up being the mouthpiece for the abusers, and that just, you know, ruins their relationship as well. This has some really intense anger and resentment, and I can see the conflict within them. The conflicted mouthful of blood, that conflict is clear. I have the memory of an elephant in the room, and I think that is a really great introduction as well. This has a lot of strength. It's edgy. It is gritty. I think gritty is the word that I would use. And I appreciate the entry. Dexter, what were your thoughts?
Well, he's another Minnesota poet. You know, I don't know. Like I said, I don't know if that means anything or not, but it seems like that's a good start to one connection that we do have. But, yeah, this is definitely an aggressive shed-all, tell-all kind of right. And, you know, no more, like you said, no more dodging, holding back any punches, no more dodging anything, but coming out, spreading out this conflicted mouthful of blood. You know, your mouthful of blood, you know, that can be, you know, obviously I think that's talking about blood, you know, of what he refers to earlier as blood is thicker than water, talking about blood as far as his family and about, you know, being tired of holding it back and not spitting it back out at them. And you know, and when he talks about how have I learned so much over these course of time, you know, you do start to, you know, I've been in kind of situations like that where you start to lose a lot of respect for somebody because it's like you still view them as so, it's like, how can you be so childish when, you know, when it's like, can't you just see that we should come to this conclusion, or can't you just see that this, we should be talking about this or that, and you can't even get past, you know, this and that, and it's just, you start to view somebody almost as childish, and then you kind of reach a new point of perspective. I don't know. I thought that this was just a very, like you said, very edgy, right? And very, it flowed very well. Pam read it great, but it was just a punchy, punching right, almost like a fight. It was just a great piece. And, Pam, what did you think about this one?
Yeah, I thought this was powerful. It's hard-hitting. I could almost see this person doing rap battles. They really got that edge to their writing. And I like how they acknowledge that, you know, that sometimes you have to walk away, you know, even if it's family, even if it's blood, you got to walk away from the abuse. You got to walk away from the, you know, the judgment. It just really, I like how on some parts they repeated the same word, and it just kind of added to the right, like the vibe of it. And I like how they acknowledge that people need to grow up, and you know, and how these other people, the other family, haven't done any growing, and they've done their soul searching, they've done their growing, they're spitting, they're not holding their tongue anymore, they're standing up for themselves, walking away, and going to be true to themselves. To me, there's really a sense of a family that judges a child for not being like them. And I don't know what the exact situation is, but to me it comes to mind like when gay or transgender kids come out to families that judge them. Or do they decide they don't want the same spiritual beliefs or no any spiritual beliefs at all? And again, they get judged when we need to just love our kids and accept them for who they are and let them be themselves without of judgment, without the fear of abuse. But sometimes you don't get that, and you just you have to walk away and make your own family. So, yeah, just an absolutely powerful rite and very well done.
Agreed. Now we have 4 minutes left, and we have a really short poem. So who's going to read this, Dex?
That's you. Go for it, Frisiana.
Okay. Good and Bad Minds Within Human Minds by Brendaband Panda. Good and bad minds with human mind. Good gives good materials like love, kind. Good man looks good quality of other man. Glad to read contest prompt for quotation. Gist of quotation herewith given the within poem. Good look gets back good look that I confirm. Good advice for life, never look bad of others. Good human other man's good quality prefers. Giving up good qualities, who looks others bad? Good path, who leaves, he looks bad, lives in sand. Good, bad, glad, sad, love, fate, love, hate, fail, pass, yes, no. God's created natures within mine natures grow. Good man roots out the bad, so his life lives in glad. Good version, good vision, good hearing duly required. Game of mind must be good to win in the life race. Good, better, best 3 steps, best offer, apex status. End poem. And Pam, would you start us off with a comment?
Yeah, I feel like Brendaband Panda always puts a certain kind of spirituality and learning lesson in his write. I like how at the end he says, good, better, best, 3 steps, best offers, apex status, in the idea that there's that way to reach the top of the pyramid. I like that he goes back and forth giving us observations between the good and the bad qualities in each one of us and how we need to learn to nurture and grow the good qualities. So very well done.
Fantastic comment, Pam. We are out of time, so thank you so much, Pam, for calling in. Thank you, Dexter, for being awesome. Thank you, Phil, for giving us the show, and thank you to everyone who wrote. Please keep an eye on Dexter's contest because he will make the one for the next show. Good night, everyone.
Good night.